Welcome to the Radio Today programme, event special.
The Radio Today programme, with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio, except the way you make it.
So this week on the podcast, we're doing something we used to do on a very regular basis, and that is cover an event. Last week, it was the second edition of Radio Days Asia, which of course is one of the offshoots from the highly successful Radio Days Europe event. It was supposed to be held in Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, but not surprisingly, it became a virtual event like pretty much everything else in the last 12 months. There were contributors from around the world, including some here in the UK, and we've got a special report for you from Radio Today's James Ross, who virtually grabbed some of the speakers as they came off the virtual stage.
Well, thanks, Roy. And yes, we'll be chatting to quite a few of the folks involved with the Radio Days Asia conference, including some names you may be familiar with, like Francis Curry, James Cridland, and Phil Riley, CEO of Boom Radio. Plus, we'll be having a dip into Japanese radio with radio host Guy Perryman, MBE, and contributions from US radio consultant Valerie Geller and someone by the name of Christian O'Connell. Plus, organizer Anders Held will be on hand, and we'll start by bumping into Alex Agashev, who's content director from Virgin Radio Dubai, who gave me a quick rundown of his home turf, a pretty vibrant radio market.
24/7 feel good hits.
Let's get it. Virgin
Radio. Yeah, it is a pretty vibrant market, certainly one of the most. And thanks for having me on today, James. Pleasure to be here. It's a very fragmented, large radio market, probably one of the most diverse in the world, really. I mean, we're talking 47 stations at last count, available audience of approximately 8 million people, 6 language sets, Arabic, English, Filipino, Hindi, Farsi, and Malayalam. We had some stations shut down last year, you know, because of the pandemic, and then they reopened with different owners. I'm talking about the English competitor set here, you know, Heart and Dance and Our Beat and Love, and they're part of 10 stations that make up the English competitor set.
Now, you're really running the leading station in the market, certainly in the English part of the market, and perhaps in the whole market. Tell us about the station. What's the format? It's Virgin Radio, and of course, you know, we know about Virgin Radio in the UK and what those guys do, but it's a different part of Virgin. It's not the same group, right?
Yeah, look, it's part of Virgin Radio International. So, you know, we're another franchise as part of the Virgin Radio International group. So we all run independently. It's a CHR format, essentially. There are 3 CHR formats in the market, Virgin Radio, Radio 1 and Channel 4. You know, but as we've seen, you know, which is what the session was essentially about, you know, at Radio Days Asia, you know, the CHR, you know, format is certainly under threat at the moment, you know, because of the fact that, you know, we're in a difficult time when it comes to, you know, CHR radio. But, you know, that said, Virgin Radio is still the leading English brand in the UAE and attracts just over 1 million listeners per week at last count.
And how are people listening? Is it FM? Is it DAB? Is it online? Well, what's the breakdown?
We've got you know, a lot of people listening on FM still. FM is still king. I mean, it is a very large commute market. Radio and YouTube actually lead the way in terms of music consumption, followed by Spotify, Apple Music, Angami, and also Deezer, who are the local players in the market. But, you know, but look, FM is still very, very strong here. As I mentioned, it's a very, very large commute market, and people listen to us online through our website at virginradiodubai.com and, of course, through the apps and the various other digital platforms that we have.
In the session that you did for Radio Days Asia, you were talking about the future of Top 40 radio. Why is it that that CHR is so under threat at the moment?
It is cyclical. There's no doubt about that. You know, we're in the doldrums at the moment in terms of the music format itself. You know, there's a lot of music coming out that's not necessarily broad appeal in terms of hit music. So obviously, a lot of urban music, which is really hot at the moment, but a lot of the music that's being released, look, it's good, but it's not great. So you just don't have as many hit songs to choose from as you would have had, say, 5 years ago when we were in a really great period of CHR radio. So, Yeah, I think we're finding, you know, both here and all over the world, really, that we're having to kind of, I guess, you know, massage our playlists a bit more. And I think the pandemic had a bit to do with that too. People are looking for more, you know, familiarity with what they're listening to. So as a result, we're having to play more gold, and more gold for a CHR radio station like Virgin means, you know, playing more music from the 2010s. You know, the old school is still really popular from the 2000s to 2010. But we're just having to play a lot more familiar music to kind of, you know, be appealing, you know, be appealing to people under the age of 35. But a pure CHR format, geez, I mean, it barely exists in the world these days, isn't it? I mean, in terms of just playing nonstop hits right across the board, it's very, very difficult to maintain that in terms of quality, you know? You know, we're seeing stations like even in a big market like Los Angeles, I mean, Kiss FM, which was the leading station there for such a long time, has dropped back to out of the top 10. I think it's hitting at number 11 now. Same in New York with Z100. So, yeah, it's a challenging time for, you know, for CHR radio.
It's nothing but feel-good hits. 104.4.
Alex Agashev there from Virgin Radio Dubai. And leading the session Alex was in was international radio consultant Francis Curry, well known to many of us, and he joins me now. Francis, what's the feeling at the conference? Do folks think that people are going to want to continue to listen to traditional radio?
So I used to be the content director for an interactive TV business called The Box in the UK. And actually, it was a jukebox style thing where people would vote for songs. And it became the number one music service in the UK. It beat MTV and VH1. And the thing that was so attractive about it was the idea then that people could vote and influence the channel's output. However, the reality is only about 20% or less of the viewers ever engaged in that way, because the truth is self-curation is demanding. We've all sat there, whether it's on Netflix or it's on Sky Movies or it's on Spotify, going, oh, what am I going to listen to? And we can waste 20 minutes, half an hour trying to decide what to listen to. And it takes brain power and it takes concentration and it takes time. And one of the things that radio does so well is curation, where as a listener, you can lean back and let somebody else do the work. And I don't have to work hard and I don't have to participate. I don't even have to engage particularly. So I think radio as a lean back medium has a very strong future, just because that curation is a bit exhausting.
Now, this conference is all about radio in Asia, Radio Days Asia. And your panel featured speakers from Thailand, from Australia, from Dubai. What do you make of radio outside the UK, you know, particularly perhaps in the Asia region?
Well, I'm very lucky. You know, in a typical year, not this past 12 months, in a typical year, I would average around about 100 flights. And I typically work in anywhere between 10 and 20 countries at any one time. So it's a rare privilege to be able to drop into so many different markets and see so many different dynamics. And of course, what you see is a different competitive environment, a different market history, a different regulatory environment, different music formats. But underlying all of those local differences, and they're not to be underestimated. So, for example, we had Alex on the panel from Dubai, and Dubai doesn't really have any DAB. Smart speakers are not officially launched in Dubai yet, and that changes the market. But underneath all those local differences, what we do see are very similar patterns emerging, which is that people want to listen to something that speaks to them. So people have got used to a level of targeting now. So an increased choice of radio means radio will survive as a medium longer because people can feel super served. But also that thing we talked about, that curation, that companionship, and that sense of community, all of those things are important wherever you are, whatever age group you are. Radio is no longer going to win the more music game. And I think radio has a danger at its heart that it has or is developing an image problem. And I think audio with apps like Clubhouse appearing clearly doesn't have an image problem. And if we want to attract the next generation of talent, the next generation of influencers who are seduced by being on screen with things like Spotify, who are seduced with being on things like podcasts, then radio needs to make sure that it is also rolling out the red carpet to those younger influencers and making sure that as an industry, it is vibrant and creative and attractive to those younger audiences.
For those uninitiated amongst us, Clubhouse you mentioned, what is Clubhouse?
Clubhouse is a really interesting new social platform. It sort of combines some of the functionality of chat rooms with some of the functionality of talk radio. So effectively, people can go in there and they can start a conversation about a topic in a room, and other people can join in that conversation as well. And of course, it's not regulated in the way that broadcast is, which is both good and bad. It means all kinds of different conversations can happen, but sometimes the quality of the hosts and the quality of the entertainment is very limited. Now, it's still, as we have this conversation now, invitation only, so it's still in beta. But we're already seeing some broadcasters in LA, in Ireland, in the UK, for example, doing a follow-up to their regular broadcast show by then appearing in Clubhouse. And I think that's an interesting example of where radio is being very dynamic, being very aware of other platforms, other opportunities. And I think, you know, radio does bring with it a level of skill, a depth of understanding about engaging with audiences that other people are still just learning.
Now, the UK radio industry has been going through a lot of changes in the last few years. Is the UK, do you think, ahead of the rest of the world in what's going on in creation of all of these new national, quote unquote, national stations, and, you know, much more focus on sort of very, very small scale community radio and so on? Is it ahead of the world with these developments in your view, looking out there, or is the rest of the world already ahead of the UK? Where would you put the UK?
If we take a very wide view, then in most markets where we see a relaxation of regulation, we tend to see consolidation happen. And that happens for two reasons. It happens for commercial reasons, and it happens for brand reasons. If we look at France, for example, you know, they've had quasi-national networks for a very long time. I think from a consumer's point of view, when, as we have in the UK, you can get to over 100 radio stations to choose from, it can be completely overwhelming. And brands give us an opportunity to navigate a complicated world in a way that is easier and makes sense. So I think the consolidation is logical in that the businesses can leverage the cost base. It's also logical in that not everybody is now racing towards the center ground, which always used to be the complaint that everybody targeted 25 to 44 year olds. But if you now look at Global, or you look at Bauer in particular, you know, they've got a very, very broad portfolio to make sure they talk to and connect with everybody from sort of, say, 15 to at least 65 or 70. So actually, I think the population as a whole has been better served by the consolidation we've seen. But there's another dynamic at play too, which is that we see all these smaller stations and these interesting new developments like Boom, like Nation Radio, who think they still see an opportunity. So whilst we do have this proliferation of brand-led broadcasting, we've got a new layer of different operators who are experimenting and doing different things. And I think that's very exciting. But I do think generally in a highly supplied, highly complicated market, whether it's radio or something else, brands allow consumers to navigate that world in a more straightforward way.
Well, one of Radio Today's close friends is James Cridland. James is the editor of Pod News and has been looking after quite a bit of the podcasting coverage at Radio Days Asia, and joins me now. James, first of all, in terms of international, where is podcasting most advanced right now?
I mean, in some ways, the most advanced podcasting is happening in the US, if only because that is where the there's a large amount of podcast listening. So, you know, that's certainly, you know, part of it. And also, you know, because the US has been focused very much on podcasting for a number of years, I was talking to Corey Layton, who runs the Australian iHeart Podcast Network, and he was saying that Australia is probably about 2 years or so behind the Americans. But if you have a look at some things, for example, if you have a look at just the amount of people consuming podcasts, then there's a ton of people consuming podcasts in places like Korea, for example, and China. It's just that they're consuming rather different podcasts than the type of podcasts that we consume, of course.
And how does the UK fare in all of this? Is it somewhere in the middle between these folks?
Well, the UK has the thing called the BBC in there, and what the BBC does is that it does rather change the mechanics of how everything works, because obviously the BBC produces an awful lot of great radio shows which are available on the BBC Listen app for free for catch-up. So that actually takes a lot of the podcast consumption away, and the UK is actually quite low in terms of the amount of weekly consumption for podcasts. Having said that, we don't actually have like-for-like numbers. The Edison Infant Dial, which is the typical gold standard of statistics, what that says is, you know, there's some good numbers coming out of the US, out of Canada as well, out of Australia, but actually we don't know what that research says about the UK because it isn't done there. So we have to rely on Rajar, and Rajar is currently, you know, it's still giving us some wonderful figures, but those figures are rather less than the figures are in America and so on. So it's hard to tell really where the UK is.
So James, how are radio stations doing with podcasting? Are they doing okay, or do they need to up their game perhaps?
I think it's been really interesting looking at how radio stations have evolved their thinking around podcasting. So when I started being involved in podcasting, I was in London in 2005, and I had coded the first daily podcast from a radio station, from the Pete and Jeff Breakfast Show at Virgin. What podcasting was back in those days was reheated radio shows made available at the end of an RSS feed with some of the music chopped out. Now, yes, you can still get that a bit. You know, I still listen to the Chris Moyles podcast every week because I am that immature, but hugely enjoy it. I should just very add. You know, I listen to a bunch of that. But of course, what radio stations are doing now is that they're producing an awful lot of stuff which is bespoke for podcasts. So, you know, if you have a look at what Nova Entertainment, for example, is doing here in Australia, they are producing a bunch of shows which wouldn't necessarily make it to their music stations, to their top 40 station of Nova or their oldest station of Smooth. They're running a bunch of additional podcasts, some of which are earning them money in terms of ad sales as well. And I think that's what we're seeing from a bunch of different radio broadcasters across the world now, is that they're focusing on new and interesting ideas, giving those a go on podcasts and seeing if that actually flies. One great example actually is in the US, where Dan Bongino has been doing a podcast for the last 2 years for Westwood One, which is part of Cumulus, and that show has just made it to a bunch of AM and FM stations across the US as a replacement for Rush Limbaugh. So, you know, we're seeing, I think, podcasting being used now by radio companies as a way of nurturing new talent and testing out new formats prior to it going onto the AM/FM radio.
Now, we mentioned the BBC, but here at Radio Days Asia, you also led a session featuring the ABC, the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, and you spoke to Tanya Nolan, head of audio news at the ABC. Let's listen to a bit of that now as you asked Tanya, what is their strategy around making some content for podcasts first, i.e. before radio?
Just being quite discerning with the audiences, understanding that they're not always going to come to us on radio, and that catch-up radio has a place in podcasting, but that you can make content that is actually fit for the platform that you're listening to it on, and applying some of the quality and the craft skills that we have in radio to podcasting. And where it's relevant, maybe applying a bit more production value, and sometimes where it's not so relevant, just getting the information out there really quickly and nimbly. And I think we are experimenting a lot more around smart speaker content, and that's where we are really noticing some of the differences between how we would make a story for radio as opposed to how it actually sounds on a smart speaker. So we're just getting a little more sophisticated in understanding that audience and what their listening habits are.
The ABC annual report showed some real success for CoronaCast in particular. That's a daily podcast about the coronavirus. What have you learned from CoronaCast's success?
That listening to audiences is a winning strategy. With CoronaCast, we really wanted to help audiences navigate their way through the COVID pandemic. And we knew right from the get-go that the best way to do that was to ask the audiences the questions that they had top of mind. And we knew that we could bring the trusted, reliable, knowledgeable sources to them in the form of Dr. Norman Swan and Tegan Taylor. And we were really motivated to hear from audiences around the questions that they had at top of mind. And we were also really focused on making it less than 10 minutes so that it could become a daily listening habit.
Now, James, one of the other sessions you did was with well-known radio consultant Valerie Geller from the US. How was that?
Valerie Geller was, you know, is always Valerie Geller. She is always great. She comes complete with her standard phrases of never be boring, make it matter, you know, and all of that. And, you know, she was really good. But I think what was interesting is I asked her what radio has learnt from the last 4 years in the US, of course, under President Trump with the pandemic and everything else. And she's, you know, she was very clear that radio is a very trusted medium. It's a very good place to get trusted information, to hear the truth. And that's something that I think we sometimes forget about. And so it was very good to hear her talk about that. I also asked whether or not she prefers radio or podcasts, whether she likes live or on demand. And her answer was both, which I thought was a great answer. She loves live because you can do some very interesting and exciting things with it. But she also loves the fact that with voice tracking, with podcasts, with other things, you can make something perfect. And that's also a good thing, too.
You know, it's audio. I mean, I'm very conservative. So I think radio still comes out of the radio box. But I think audio, you know, people want audio. And the intimacy of audio, the power of our medium. If you understand our medium and you love radio, and you understand what it is to be alone and to push the black box, and suddenly you're not alone, and your imagination takes flight, or you're inspired by a piece of music, or you just want to feel connected to people when you feel isolated, radio is magical, and it offers that. But podcasting also offers that. Radio podcasting is just radio called audio on demand, you know, but it's still radio. And the problem with podcasting is that it's not curated, so you can hear anything. So some of it is very, very wonderful and edgy, experimental and new. And some of it is pretty much like your nephew in the basement who has a microphone and absolutely nothing to say. And so it's that full range. So my job is to train broadcasters and podcasters, anybody who wants to learn how to communicate more powerfully. We've got these tools and we can give them to you, speaking visually, you know, making the word pictures, igniting the imagination, not going too long with anything you want to talk about. The secret sauce is talk to one person, talk directly. It's almost like if we're making eye contact, you want to have that intimacy, that level of connectedness.
Well, one of the other sessions at Radio Days Asia focused on radio in Japan. And one of the Brits who's been embedded in radio in Tokyo for the last couple of decades is Guy Perryman.
Oh, that woke me up. Red Bedrock. And a brand new track called El Gusano from the new Red Bedrock album, Kicking and Screaming. There you go, something to shout about, something to scream about, some brand new music from Japan. Well, from around the world, based here in Japan, Red Bed Rock, multicultural rock band with songs in different languages and four members from different countries. On Inter FM 897, on your Wednesday edition of GPS at 744.
The Guy Perryman Show.
The Guy Perryman Show on Inter FM 897.
Guy hosts the early breakfast show on Inter FM in Tokyo and joins me now. Guy, tell us a bit more about radio in Japan.
Well, James, hi. Lovely to chat with you. Thanks for inviting me today. I guess there's not a lot of radio in Japan. And that's the first thing I always tell people. And people who don't know much or don't know anything about Japanese radio, there's very little radio here, very sadly. And being a radio lover and being a person who loves living in Japan, those two equations are not fantastic for me. There are about 3 to 5 major networks here in Japan, and they own a station in each of the major markets. So, for example, in Tokyo, you're only going to have 5 commercial radio stations, for example. Japan hasn't had a radio culture. You could analyze this for weeks. I think generally because it doesn't have a car culture, a driving culture. The Japanese make cars and sell them to the rest of the world, but most people in Japan catch a train to work. Hence the Walkman being invented, because, of course, it was a great way for people to listen to music on the move without disturbing other people. So you could sort of make sense that the Walkman was invented in Japan. So radio is very limited here. The other key thing I think about radio, too, is how the stations are formatted and programmed. You don't have the commercial hit radio station and the jazz station and the classical station. Generally, musically, all the stations are all mixed up. The programming is more like television, where every hour, every 2 hours, the program will completely change. So you'll listen to one station and in 12 hours, you'll hear a whole range of different programs, different styles of music. So the programming itself sounds very different here.
So tell us about the station that you're on, Inter FM.
Inter FM started in 1996, and they actually got their license after the big earthquake in Kobe. And they realized, the authorities realized, it was very difficult for non-Japanese speakers to get information, emergency information, in real time. So after the Kobe earthquake, the government had a license issued for Tokyo market. I presume Kobe got a station too. But Tokyo got the Inter FM 897 license. Back then it was Inter FM 76.1. With the remit that they had to broadcast emergency information in various languages if there was an earthquake or some other form of emergency. So their license was based on that. Because of that, the people that owned the station decided to program the station for the expat community and international community here in Japan, and the Japanese community who want non-Japanese language radio. So that at the very beginning, the station was formatted like an international, like an American style or British style station, with a music format, pretty much all English, but other language mixed in too, and essentially a non-stop commercial hit radio format. Over the years, that has changed. They being the station owners, the sales department and advertising agencies, had trouble selling the station. They didn't really know. They didn't have a model how to sell an English or a non-Japanese language station to advertisers. And this has been an ongoing problem and is still a problem today, over 20 years later. So the station has actually gone through various management and ownership changes. Current owners are one of the major Japanese radio networks, and they're now putting in Japanese programming. So the license is still there to broadcast for an emergency situation in multiple languages, but the programming has now become... it's gone back to Japanese-style radio, J-pop music, mostly Japanese language. I'm pretty much one of the few programs still clinging on in the old-style international format.
So Japanese radio does seem quite different from the rest of the world, and you had quite a bit of experience, obviously in the UK, and you worked for Virgin, I think, in the UK, and have done lots of different things. So quite a different experience, really.
Very different. When I first came to Japan, I actually came with Virgin Megastores as their DJ when they opened the first store here. And I was, like I said, so surprised at the lack of radio, the lack of variety in radio here, which was very frustrating. So I couldn't work on the radio in Japan. It was just the Virgin Megastore DJing, which was actually a lot of fun. And the company expanded. We ended up with 35 stores, and we had DJs in every store. And actually, I created a cable and satellite radio network for the Virgin Group. So we were on a public network that subscribers could listen to, and we created our own essentially in-house radio station. So that was a lot of fun. But yeah, I was very surprised at how Japanese radio operated. And the other thing that surprised me were how many people it took to make one radio show. I'd go to a radio station, there'd be 15 people there. There'd be the person who was on air. There'd be the person writing the scripts, the person putting the CDs in the CD player. There'd be the music director, the program director, the script writer. And, you know, it goes on and on and on. And I was like, wow, I came from the environment where I made the radio show by myself. It was, you know, I programmed it. I got the music myself. Had to. We didn't write scripts, just get on the air and sort of do it. So I was very surprised at the difference in how radio was created in Japan. It took a lot of people. It was quite expensive. And again, it was more like a television production with lots of production. One extra thing that I was really surprised in Japan, and is still the case, radio stations are not programmed by a program director per se. They're essentially programmed by the sales department. So, for example, an advertising agency will come in with a sponsor and buy a slot of time on the air. And then the programming department with the advertising agency and the client will work out what kind of program they want to make.
So it's kind of reverse.
Exactly. So again, that really surprised me here. Programming directors not programming their station.
Just in closing, Guy Perryman, MBE. What did you get the MBE for, Guy?
Officially for services to British music in Japan. And actually, I think that was mostly due to Virgin Megastore work, DJing in the sky for Virgin Atlantic, flying back and forth between London and Tokyo, creating live onboard programs, which was a lot of fun.
Wow.
And actually, around the London Olympics time, I did have a program on the air here in Tokyo, which was an all-British music show, which was loads of fun. So I was able to, all the British artists who came to Japan came on the show. So I was kind of flying the flag, not that I'm a flag waver, It was a really lovely thing to be able to essentially be a bridge between the UK and Japan.
Just going to pause the interviews before we go on to the next one. Let me tell you about Clean Feed, because whether you're doing an OB, an interview, or co-hosting, Clean Feed is designed for radio and podcasters. And now it's simple to connect live audio over the web. The quality is good. It's great, in fact, and you can record as well. Clean Feed doesn't cost anything to get started, and you can find out more at cleanfeed.net. Right, back to Radio Days Asia.
I'm joined now by Phil Riley, who is the co-founder and CEO of Boom Radio. Why Radio Days Asia? Why do we find you being part of this conference?
I will talk to anybody that wants to hear me about Boom Radio. And Radio Days Asia asked, did I want to talk about it? And I said, yes, I'm happy to proselytize on behalf of my baby. So.
Absolutely. Well, look, you've had a long and distinguished career in radio. You've been through every brand name that we can think of, whether it's Heart or Chrysalis or Orion, Bauer, EMAP, BRMB, the whole lot, back through the last 40 years, if you don't mind me saying. And now you're in with a new station, and we've heard quite a lot about it on the Radio Today programme over the last 4 or 5 months. You've been on the air, for a month. How's it going?
It's going brilliantly well, but better than I think we had any right to expect. The listeners have been phenomenal. We're getting new listeners every day, growing our streaming numbers, which is great. Obviously growing our DAB listening, because we've moved from just being on in London to now being on across the whole of the UK on DAB+. And the response is just everything we could have dreamed of and more. So we can't possibly complain about where we are. And we're starting now to see clients come on board and advertisers want to advertise with us. We hope that's going to grow and grow and grow, obviously, because it's very early days. But yeah, that all the signs are really terrific.
I mean, that's the key, isn't it? Bringing the advertisers in, bringing the money in. And I guess when you started it, I think back in the summer last year when you guys had the idea, possibly is unsure. Are people going to spend on that age group?
I think that was the risk then. It's still, to a degree, the risk now. We might end up with a very big audience, but not as much advertising revenue as smaller stations targeting younger listeners have. And we need to cut our cloth accordingly. But the business model was based on us doing okay, but not spectacularly well from an advertising perspective. We knew that it would be more of a challenge for us because of the demographic we're targeting. So we built the model around that, and so far, so good.
I mean, sort of two areas, I guess, to focus on the programming and obviously the business side. What are the lessons you've learned on in those two things in the month since you launched and since you started designing the station, as I say, back in the summer?
Well, I think from a programming perspective, we decided fairly early on that what we were going to do was to target disaffected Radio 2 listeners. Now, that's not because Radio 2 has become a bad station. It's because in their efforts to broaden their appeal and ensure that they're appealing younger, that of necessity means they can't be as of appeal to the older audience that we're aspiring to serve. So we deliberately positioned the station and thought through the programming in a way that we felt might deliver an audience from Radio 2, as opposed to the commercial sector. From a business perspective, we started with the view that because this was a station aimed at an audience where it might be more difficult to get advertisers, we better make it as inexpensive and efficient to run as possible. And in a sort of weird way, the pandemic helped us because it made working from home and running radio stations remotely an acceptable thing to do. I don't think people would have given us the credit for doing it 2 years ago if we'd have done it the way we're doing it now 2 years ago. They'd have just said, well, that's all a bit cheap and cheerful, isn't it, Phil? Whereas now I think people say, everybody knows that you can do this from home and it can be as compelling and the professional and as good a quality as doing it from a studio.
So why not, right?
And I think, yeah, so why not? And also the people that we wanted to get on air as our presenters are scattered to the four winds. You know, three of them are in Spain. You know, one of them's in Birmingham, three of them are in London, one of them's on the South Coast, one of them somewhere else. And we simply couldn't have got all those people in at one building to do strip shows on a station the way that traditionally one would have done it. So you have to cut your cloth accordingly. And I think the way that we're doing it works with the grain of the times, it works with the grain of the people we want to employ, and it is delivering the sort of output that we, you know, had in our minds that we wanted to employ. The station sounds the way I thought it would sound when we started talking about it last July, August, September.
How has it been, you know, getting some kind of team spirit together? Because, of course, you guys have never been in the same building together, all together, have you? Which is, you know, obviously an advantage of many other stations that have been together and suddenly they're apart. But now you haven't had that.
Well, I could be entirely cynical and say, actually, there's possibly an advantage in not having your entire presentation team in the same building at the same time in terms of team spirit. But I, you know, I would couldn't possibly go into detail on that. But actually, the presenters have been absolutely fantastic and they love doing this. And the reason they love doing it is because we love them doing it for us. And I think they recognise, as we do, that we're all giving ourselves almost a second chance, a last chance at this. This is something that we probably none of us thought we were going to have another opportunity to do. I certainly didn't, you know, this time last year think, yeah, wow, in a year's time, I'll be launching another radio station nationally with TV advertising and, you know, ads in the papers and buying social media and having nationally known presenters on the radio. That would never have occurred to me a year ago. But it's happened. And I'm extremely grateful for the opportunity. And I think, you know, my fellow founders are grateful for the opportunity. And I think the presenters are too. So that team spirit just comes out of the fact that we're all just really grateful to be in a job and doing something we love.
Amongst all of this, what's your take on the rest of the radio scene in the UK at the moment? You know, obviously this is a new departure, but, you know, hot on the heels of the consolidation under Bauer and many other changes and you know, all these national brands being created over the last couple of years.
I think in general it's great. I'm very supportive of what Global have done and what Bauer have done in response. They're two different radio groups, and I think that's good. They've got different ethos, and I think that helps them spark off against each other. And I think that's a positive thing. What do I think about that last round of consolidation? It probably had to happen. So you might as well just accept that that was going to take place. I think what's really encouraging is that we've seen a new groundswell of small-scale stations open up essentially on DAB in localities. And I think that's great, and I hope that many of them survive and that there is a space for the town station to serve those towns where, you know, the old-style ILRs have now become part of, you know, the HITS network, the Greatest HITS network, the HART network, whatever network it might be. So I'm pleased about that. I think small-scale DAB is exciting for the same reasons, if it gives new entrants an opportunity to stake a claim. The business is obviously in a difficult position because COVID has meant things have ground to a halt from a local advertising perspective. That's very difficult. Obviously, we haven't seen any research for a while, so that's difficult too. So the industry is having a hard time, but I think responding well. And we know that listening levels are as good as they've ever been, if not better. I think all the evidence suggests that people are listening for longer to radio because of the pandemic.
Well, 1 month in, good luck from here on. Phil Riley is Chief Executive and co-founder of Boom Radio.
Thanks, James.
Now, one of the main sessions at Radio Days Asia was a live link to Melbourne, to Gold 104.3 and Christian O'Connell. Christian, who, as we know, quit a hugely successful show on Absolute to move with his family to the other side of the world. Well, here's a clip from his presentation as he's interviewed by his producer, Jack Post.
The Christian O'Connell Breakfast Show. At the third stroke, it will be three.
Mind your wire.
Two. I didn't know I had curly hair until I was 15.
One. Oh, Derek!
Back tomorrow from 6.
Welcome to the Christian O'Connell Breakfast Show, Melbourne's Gold 104.3.
If you don't know what your radio is for, you don't know who it's for. And then when you know who your radio show is for and why you're making it, I think you can surrender the thing that you're trying to make a show for everybody, and that's just impossible. You need to start thinking that it's a show for somebody. And when you accept that it's a show for somebody and you are making something for somebody else, there's a spirit of generosity with that. And I think that's a better way to work rather than being focused on the outcome or ratings. You know, radio here in Australia is even more competitive in the UK. And so for me to try and keep my focus, it's always about the next day's show and being generous and knowing what the show really stands for. Otherwise, if you're not careful, and you'll hear a lot of radio shows like this, it's a collection of bits that every single morning there's a brand new collection of bits. And I don't know anything about the people who are doing those radio shows. I think one of the successful things about podcasting over the last couple of years is actually podcasts, what they do is they make niche. They make that big. They really know what these shows are for and who they're making it for. And I think radio needs to take a leaf out of podcasting and what people actually are. The reason why more and more people are coming to podcasting, I think leaving traditional radio. So values are really, really important. If you don't know, you can't tell yourself in one or two lines what your radio show is for, then how on earth are your audience meant to know why they need to come back to you tomorrow morning? So I think values are really important. For me, I think the real magic, my job is to pay attention to my life. And so during the day, most of my material comes from, you know, being aware of my own thoughts. If I'm getting angry with something, jealous or frustrated, or I think something's odd. And then how do I use that on the radio show? So again, it's looking out. I think the ordinary is the extraordinary. You know, it's this morning we were talking about beanbags and a split beanbag and how sometimes if you're on the same journey every single day, often there's a nemesis of one particular red light or junction that can really, really annoy you. And so it's all about those little details. Comedians have been doing this for years. Billy Connolly, Jerry Seinfeld. It's small. But even if when you're doing a big story arc like we do on the show, it's then getting it down to the small moments. What are the listeners actually engaging with? What do you want them to really connect to? You can only do it in small human moments. There's so much noise and chaos right now that we're pumping out there. Media is and advertising yeah. and online. It's like, I think you need to slow it down and make it smaller and get into the granular.
I think at the start of the year, we had a really big sliding doors moment for the show where the station offered you $50,000 to give away as a big prize to start the year, and you said no to it. Why did you say no?
To be really honest, I wish it was. I could say it was due to my wisdom. I told my wife what the idea was, and she said, "Oh, that's really boring." And so I rang you and I went, "Listen, this is a wake-up call." What happened was there were going to be two new rival kind of shows going up against us. And I think we all got into, you become sometimes, once you are successful, and you know, in the last 12 months, our show's gone to number one. And sometimes if you're not careful, you become like Gollum, trying to hang on to that ring of number one. And it's not then about being bold and adventurous and just doing radio for the joy of it and enjoying the dance every single day. Suddenly you become a place of scarcity, and that you could lose something. And that is a horrible way to live your life. You couldn't be with your partner like that, although there are people that live like that. And so again, it's that place of coming to a place of expansion and generosity. And so that's where it really came from, was like, there are a lot of shows who give away money, and they do that for one reason, which is to buy listeners and to drive them into the show. And I think that's a lazy way to do radio. That wasn't how I grew to love radio as a kid. I'm sure it wasn't how you grew to. It wasn't. Yep. I don't know anything about the radio show if you're just giving money away. And if you're playing the game where you're giving money away because the other show's giving money away and the other show's giving money away, you're all playing the same game. My thing is to try and do our own game, create our own world, like I think radio shows do. You've got to build your own independent universe and let them give away money. I think that if people are coming to connect to my show and we're not relying on money, we've got to work a bit harder and actually connect properly with the audience through values that people want. And I think, I remember one of the first bosses I had in radio told me that people are motivated through fear, which is a real typical kind of radio show mentality. But I've learned over the last couple of years moving here is that actually people are, they're motivated by connection and community and love. People want to feel connected. They need that right now in the world. COVID has really brought this home, but people really want connection, and they want more than that than big, noisy cash giveaways. They want to know who you are. Why do you want them to listen? They want to feel connected to you, to your values, who you are as real people. This is supposed to be personality radio, and I think it's got lost in the time of big, noisy radio and cash giveaways. I think that's a real shame.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Before you came here, there was a belief in Australian radio that the big cash giveaway had to be part of your breakfast show, as well as it's built on personalities, but you to give away a lot of money is how you draw people into the show, and you've not relied on that and then taken the show to number one. The other thing I like that you did that we didn't believe could work in Australia is something as simple as people texting into the show, which is something you had in the UK, but they told you here, don't worry about having a text line. Nobody texts in. People only call in. How do you... You use the text line really well now. How do you change an audience's habit?
First of all, everyone watching this at Radio Days who are like having chats about state-of-the-art technology and digital broadcasting and podcasting, they're going, wait, he moved somewhere where they thought he was from the future talking about SMS texting? You know, there are certain people in England who thought I was coming here to be a frontier DJ. And chat's going, you turned up with all this future talk, not of 5G, but of sending a simple text message.
I can, from home, type you something and you read it in the studio?
Yeah, it was. I was actually told by somebody, Australians don't do that. They don't use their phone to send messages to each other. And so for me in the UK, it was another way, you know, everyone talks to each other on text messages. You'll text your friends more than sometimes pick up the phone and have a conversation with them. So I wanted there to be another way. My goal, as soon as I got here, as an outsider, as an unknown, was to start the conversation. However it was, it might take a while for them to call in. It actually didn't. But I thought, if it's an easy way to just send me a text message, it doesn't matter. It's all about starting the conversation. When you are talking to your friends or even strangers, those moments of human connection when you're laughing or you're ranting, you're at a sports game, it's a conversation. And radio to me was built on that. And I'm obsessed with every single day we start the show, it's a start of a new conversation. It's like your friends. You know, and if you said to your friend, come out with me tomorrow, you've got the chance to win $1,000. You know, they're not really investing in who you are as a friend. Yep. And it's the same thing to me. You are their friend in the morning or evening whenever they're connecting with you. And I think that friendship part of it has got lost along the way. But yeah, the texting and sending messages was another way for them to communicate with the show. It's really important to me. Now we get a couple of hundred every single day.
And I think the type of person who would text a show is different to the type of person who would call the show. And then you use email really well. As well, which I haven't really heard in Australian radio, which people...
Again, it's another future concept out here in Australian radio of email. I'm starting MySpace tomorrow out here.
But you get people who wouldn't call a show, but they are willing to share their story through email. After 20 years doing breakfast radio, how do you still find joy and make sure you keep finding that joy every day?
I've got a very big drug problem. and I'm high right now. No, I think it's hard. You go through cycles. Coming here was a big shock to my system. Both bringing two daughters here and my wife was like a massive shock, and like doing a radio show the other side of the world, where to begin with, it was very clear I wasn't welcome. People actually emailed me on the email system I set up, so they could send me hate mail, basically. People would tell me that I wasn't invited. The first text message, again, I wanted this text message. The first one we got 20 minutes into the show told me to home. It really was confronting to begin with. We made it very clear, you're not one of us. And we are tribal, and I wasn't one of them. And so trying to work my way through it and find areas of connection and commonality was a really big challenge. And that's what's given me meaning. And everything I turned up thinking I knew about radio, it was an aggressive unlearning for the first 12 mm-hmm. months. And my life and my radio life is 10 times better because of that. It simplified it, radically simplified. It reduced to me what radio is really, really important about.
You've done in the past, you've done a lot of stand-up. You just wrote a book. You've got your own podcast separate to the show. Do you think it's important to have other creative elements outside a radio show to feed back into it?
Yeah, I think I would go crazy afterwards. I think it's kind of like... I think this is the word, cross-pollinate. I think I know that I'm at my best where I've got the radio show and something else as well. It kind of, and it's a stretch. I think it's very important sometimes to have a goal outside of your radio show that is just beyond your grasp, even if it feels like it's overwhelming at times. That stretch, it's keeping your soul alive. It's keeping you engaged with something. You bring that to the show the next day. That keeping that spark alive, never letting yourself kind of go to sleep in your own life, which is what we all do. You know, we sit in front of our phones for hours just doing this. There's so much of our lives we almost kind of sleepwalk through. It just keeps you alive in your life. I think it's very important to have, it doesn't need to be a big mega project, but just having something else keeps that spark. It's another log on the fire.
How do you make sure you're keeping your ideas at a high level, especially on a daily show?
I don't even try and do that. It's turnover. You've got to constantly be turning it over. That is a crippling pressure to put yourself under that thing that they have to be great. I've been doing this almost 23 years. I reckon 50% of my links are bang average, and you have to be okay with that. But the other 50%, I put up against anybody's and go, well, that's there. So it's volume. I'm on 3 hours, 5 days a week. There's another show tomorrow. There's more shows next week. You're like Amazon. I'm shipping. I'm doing the best I can.
Yep.
My best is still pretty good. The most important thing for me is to be really, 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 really as consistent as I can. The most important thing when you're on radio 5 days a week, whatever you do as a good show or bad show, you need to be rigorously consistent. That is everything. You're hopefully building a career that has got endurance built into it, especially when you're doing breakfast radio. There's a lot of shows to get through in the year. My idea is just constantly looking for new ideas. It's turnover, turnover, turnover.
Christian O'Connell enthusing on his love of radio for Radio Days Asia, and some great tips there as well. Well, to round us off, here's Anders Held, one of the original founders of Radio Days Europe, as well as being one of the organisers of Radio Days Asia. And he's on the line now. Anders, you've been running the event from Stockholm, and as a result, working through the night in a completely different time zone. Now, given this has been a virtual event, where have the participants to the conference been tuning in from?
So we had 400 people from 40 different countries. So all across Asia, and especially Southeast Asia, China, India, to a certain extent, also Japan and Taiwan and Australia. And we also had a lot of people from New Zealand coming in this year. You know, they didn't come for the first live event we had last year or 1.5 years ago. But now they saw the opportunity of actually getting some international contacts, and we had a lot of New Zealanders coming in. So the feedback so far has been extremely upbeat and very, very good. We have a survey out, and it points just in one direction, that people are really happy about that this happened. They love the content, the international content, the Asian content, and they love that we also added a new thing this year, which was more of a training program at the end with masterclasses, really top quality masterclasses about radio and podcasting on the third day. And that's something they thought was really useful as well.
Now, looking forward, you've got Radio Days Europe coming up, and you've also got a podcasting event. Tell us about what the plans are ahead.
Yeah, so two really interesting events. So the first one's coming up in June. We have for 4 years had a podcast day in Europe about everything concentrated on one day, all about podcasting. This year, we are teaming up with the British Podcast Awards. So this is a joint effort by the British Podcast Awards and Radio Europe's Podcast Day. So that will be on the 7th of June, and it will be a 24-hour event. So it's running in different time zones around the world. So there's also an interesting new thing. So it will be definitely all about podcasting, everything you want to know. And then the original Radio is Europe is coming up in delayed now for 1.5 years, but we hope and we are sure we can pull it off in October in Lisbon. And it will be a hybrid event. So I think we are many who are longing for actually meeting others and travel if we can. So hopefully most people will turn up in person and have a great event in October. It's like a really good weather there as well at that time of year. But also if you can't, you can still enjoy the content from your sofa or wherever you are. So it will be a hybrid event. So we all have to see future events, I think, like they might be hybrid. So you have the choice of traveling and meeting people, or you can just join virtually.
Well, good luck with that, and well done for the last few days of Radio Days Asia. After all of your all-night sessions, do go and have a lie down. Anders Held, thank you very much.
Thanks, James.
Anders Held, one of the organisers of Radio Days Asia, rounding it all off for us. Back to you, Roy.
Thank you, James, and thank you to all the contributors, including Christine O'Connell, who, as you may know, is a regular on this podcast, or at least used to be. Thank you, James, and thank you for sticking with us throughout this special event coverage edition of the Radio Today programme. We'll be back, all being well, next week.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.